believe, Mr. Younger, that you took this case by appointment to the court, am I correct? You have the deep thanks of the court for your fine work on behalf of your client. The next case this morning is number 022622, Emmanuel Page.
Your Honors, my name is Hudson Smelly. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Emmanuel Page, the appellant. This is a procedural waiver case, a criminal case, in which a pro se litigant, Mr. Emmanuel Page, correctly followed Wisconsin procedure. The issue before the court is whether he'll get his day in federal court to litigate a claim of ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel on primarily two bases. First, that post-conviction counsel failed to allege, failed to challenge.
Well, doesn't the state of Wisconsin confess that that was error?
Your Honor, what the state of Wisconsin does is give a concession that provides kind of a half victory for my client because of the two bases for his claim of ineffective assistance of post-conviction
counsel.
Trial
counsel and post-conviction counsel.
Both challenges are against post-conviction counsel. One for not challenging the work done by the trial counsel, and the other for not challenging the admission of a alleged handwritten confession that Mr. Page neither wrote nor signed. That latter claim, they say we can continue on, but the former claim we cannot. That's how I understand their position.
Okay, well, wasn't his pro se filing alleging incompetence of trial counsel at one point?
He's got a lot of pro se filings, but the one to the federal district court, it alleged both trial counsel and post-conviction counsel.
But could I ask you, Wisconsin seems to have a somewhat unusual procedure in which effectiveness of trial counsel gets raised in a motion after the trial is over. I want to sort of call it a post-trial motion as opposed to post-conviction in the sense of after an appeal has gone all the way up to the state Supreme Court, because that's not what we're talking about, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's brought in a post-conviction counsel by an attorney called post-conviction counsel.
Right, and that happens at the moment after the trial court is essentially finished with the case, but before the first direct appeal is before the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, is that correct?
Yes.
And then in this case it was the same lawyer, right, who was filing this post-trial, quote, post-conviction proceeding and then taking what wound up being the Anders appeal. So I'll tell you why I'm worried about this, because it seems to me in the sense of this blended procedure that Wisconsin uses, you may have an argument that you're raising a Sixth Amendment right that can be raised, but this court has a number of decisions, including, for instance, Cawley against Atella, where we say there's no right to effective assistance of counsel in post-conviction proceedings, by which we mean, you know, really at the end of the day, post-conviction proceedings. But this all seems to have been consolidated together in his first direct appeal to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right.
This is about an attorney's performance in the trial court in a post-conviction motion and then on direct appeal. This is not about, because he had no counsel on the collateral proceeding.
Okay, so we're not talking about any alleged right to effectiveness in a collateral proceeding.
That's correct.
We're talking about the effectiveness in this first consolidated proceeding where Wisconsin contemplates that you'll raise these effectiveness of trial counsel claims that he didn't know, or he didn't, in the Anders context, do so. Is that right?
The post-conviction counsel did not raise the claim,
right,
and that's the only time you can raise the claim.
Right,
and
okay.
We cited a number of cases on that point. It could not be raised later on direct appeal.
And your point would be that even though he was invited and indeed took advantage of the opportunity to raise a few more things that the lawyer wasn't raising in the Anders proceeding, that you're asking too much of a pro se. I want to make sure I understand
your
argument.
Well, I think that's a fair assessment, but the point more specifically is that if Mr. Page had raised the claim of ineffective trial counsel on direct appeal, the court wouldn't have heard it. They would have said, Mr. Page, you raised it at the wrong time. This procedure's been established since 1979. In fact, a day after they rendered the opinion confirming his conviction, two judges on that same panel rendered another opinion where a pro se litigant filed a response to a no-merit brief. He raised trial counsel's effectiveness. They said, we won't hear it.
In other words, this should have been raised by a post-conviction motion in the trial court.
Yes,
prior
Your Honor.
To the appeal. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that in your view, is the problem.
That is what this case is about.
Yeah. That the counsel simply didn't raise it.
That's correct. I think all through this, the position has been, by the state, and I think the courts have taken to it that he didn't raise it in response to the no merit brief. As I said, they wouldn't have heard it. They've demonstrated that, and that's the law there.
Now, assuming arguendo that Wisconsin, in its local procedure, might have allowed this your client to raise this in the appellate court by way of a response to the no merits brief, should we consider that to be a forfeiture or a waiver of the right to bring a habeas? He has a right to counsel, doesn't he, on that appeal?
Yes.
So we're really saying that a counsel-less defendant, because that's what he was at that stage.
That's how I view it, even though the law would hold that an attorney filing an Anders brief still should zealously advocate his client's position. I think there's a bit of he was out on his own.
But the state of Wisconsin, counsel would put the burden on him to clear up his lawyer's act.
Yes, and that's kind of one of our points here. You're entitled to effective assistance of counsel. Do you get it if the only way to preserve it is to follow behind him and fix his mistakes? I don't expect my clients to do it. I don't think, especially in a criminal context where this guy's in jail and, that he should be held to that standard. But that's what it is.
So even if the Wisconsin court were correct in saying that he should have raised it by reply to the Anders brief, there's a real Sixth Amendment concern as to whether Wisconsin can even have that rule, isn't it?
I agree. And that's one of the points we pick up on a bit in the brief and more so in the reply brief, that effectively erases effective assistance of counsel, especially whereas here the claim has never been heard on the merits, and according to the state it never should. If a claim can never be challenged in a forum, then really what value is the right? And as you pointed out here, the onus was supposedly on Mr. Page to raise this claim. But if he had raised it, presumably the court would have made a ruling on the merits. He would have either gotten a new trial, or he would have been able to go to federal court, or they would have said, no, you can't raise it this time, as indicated earlier.
Let me again, you've explained it once, and explain it to me again. Is this a two-track proceeding? In other words, ineffective assistance counsel operates immediately after, apart from any merits appeal?
That's correct. You can raise the ineffective assistance of counsel in the trial court immediately upon conviction. Post-conviction counsel, who is the one who would do that, he cannot be challenged until you get to the collateral proceeding. That's where Mr. Page did so, and that's where the court said, no, you've waived that right because you should have followed behind his footsteps and done what he did not do. I'm sorry to give you a question.
I still want to get this clear in my mind, and perhaps I can ask your opponent not to take any more of your time. That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smalley. And we'll hear now from Mr. Weinstein.
Could you explain the process for me, please?
Yes, I certainly will. Wisconsin has two post-conviction motions by rule. One is 974-02, and one is 974-06.
And just to be clear, when you say post-conviction, you mean the minute the trial is over. This happens before the direct appeal from the
subsequent to the judgment of
verdict, if you will, you know, the
and
entry of judgment.
Subsequent to the judgment, well, it depends on which one we're talking about. Both of them are post-conviction in the sense that they are subsequent to the judgment of conviction.
Okay.
A 974-02 motion is filed subsequent to the judgment of conviction and prior to the direct appeal. A 974-06 motion.
Does that stop the direct appeal?
It occurs before the notice of appeal is due. But it's a very complex rule. The rule that covers all the time limits is 80930, and it all depends on filing various papers. And I can go through that for you, but it's
you started.
The bottom line is that the time for filing the appeal, the notice of appeal, does not begin to run until the trial court rules on a 974-02 motion.
Is it a prerequisite to the appeal? Must you raise matters in the post-trial motion?
Not unless it requires evidence beyond the trial record. And that's one of the problems Mr. Page has.
Effectiveness of counsel issues normally do require.
That's right. An ineffective assistance of trial counsel motion would require a 974-02 motion. But one of the issues Mr. Page seeks to raise, which has to do with whether or not he got his Miranda rights and whether or not his confession is voluntary, did not require a 974-02 motion to raise. And that brings in another problem.
But sometimes people layer these things. I mean, sometimes they'll say the reason these things didn't happen is because I had ineffective assistance of counsel. And so actually the top layer that a court will look at is the effectiveness of counsel, and if that was ineffective, then the procedural default is excused, and you can go below to the thing that counsel should have done.
That's true, and that is in some ways the way 974-06 works. If Mr. Page wants to raise ineffective assistance of trial counsel in a 974-06 motion, he has to demonstrate a sufficient reason why that could not, or why he did not raise that on direct appeal, setting aside for the minute that he had a no-merit appeal. If it had been a normal appeal, there would be no question he would have to do that.
And the direct appeal encompasses the result of this 974.02
yes.
hearing. Okay.
How does he obtain counsel on this, on the second track, the ineffective assistance?
Under the 974.02? The public defender points a post-conviction / appellate counsel. Somebody different from the trial counsel, usually. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be, but it almost always is. Someone who is separate from trial counsel, who then evaluates the record and determines whether a 974-02 motion is necessary. If it is, they're supposed to file the motion, present the evidence, and take the appeal. On some occasions, although it's fairly rare, the appellate counsel is someone separate from the post-conviction counsel. At least at this point,
it doesn't have to be.
It can be, but it doesn't have to be. That's right. And in most cases, it's not. And it wasn't in this case.
Not separate.
Not separate from the post-conviction counsel and the appellate counsel. The reason that becomes critical is because if one wants to allege ineffective assistance of appellate counsel rather than post-conviction counsel, that cannot be done in the trial court. That has to be done on writ of habeas corpus under a case called State versus Knight, which is referred to in appellate circles as a Knight petition. So if he wants to attack Mr. Kagan's failure to raise certain issues in a brief, let's say, as opposed to a no-merit, he would have to file a Knight petition in the Court of Appeal. And frankly, that was the vehicle if he wanted to claim that what Mr. Kagan did was not raise his voluntariness of his confession or the giving of his Miranda rights, because that did not require a 974-02 motion. There was a motion to suppress, and there was evidence taken, and all of those issues could have been resolved on appeal without a motion. The reason I think, well, he had one claim also. He claimed that his trial counsel didn't call one of the two officers that was present at the questioning. and that would have been a straight trial counsel. But he could have brought it even if it had not been raised in the no merit, if he would have demonstrated a sufficient reason for not bringing on direct appeal. In our view, at the no, in his response to the no merit, by saying my post-conviction counsel was ineffective for not having what we call a Mockner hearing, which is a motion to on the ineffective assistance of counsel claim. I disagree with Mr. Smelly that if he had raised this in a no merit report, it would have necessarily been rejected as a waiver. It might have been. In some cases, they are. The cases that Mr. Smelly cites are cases in which the claimed ineffective assistance of trial counsel really was essentially dealt with on the merits. So, for instance, one of the ones he cites is a claim where he says, my trial counsel was ineffective for not filing a motion to withdraw my guilty plea. Well, the court had just gone through a page and a half discussion of how the court had not erred in taking the plea. So I'm not sure whether that, they did say waiver, and I suppose we hold them to what they say, but they could have just as well said, he raises it, but it's not a, an issue of arguable merit. I have seen instances where the court, when the court believes that the petitioner or the defendant raises a claim in a response that they believe has arguable merit, that they reject the no merit report and tell the attorney that he can either persist in withdrawal, in which case they'll dismiss the appeal and allow the petitioner to go back to trial court and file his own 974-02 motion, or they will, under the current rules they have authority, at the time of Mr. Page's case they did not have this power, but now they have the authority to remand to the trial court for such a hearing, and they could just order appointed counsel to go back and file a motion without having to dismiss the appeal. But I have seen instances even before that where they would dismiss the appeal and allow the petitioner to proceed either pro se or with different counsel in the trial court to file another motion.
That seems to lack the regularity, though, that we look for when we're talking about adequate and independent state grounds. I mean, if it's just sort of when they feel like it, they could do certain things. Seems like that's a terrible burden to place on a represented pro se petitioner.
And that may be true if what he did was raise it and they had rejected it. But he didn't raise it at all.
But how did he know when he was represented that he had to be better than his lawyer in terms of thinking of the issues?
Well, he said it in his response, so I guess he recognized it.
In his response to the no merits, he
recognized he had an obligation to raise all arguable issues.
And so, tell me again, what happened then at that point?
Well, he filed a response to the no merit report,
right,
in which he raised two issues that the attorney did not raise, but they were neither of them had anything to do with the confession. They had to do with instructions. And the court then determined, went through both of the attorney's identification of error and Mr. Page's identification of error to determine whether any of those issues had any arguable merit, which is what Anders requires. And in their independent review, they found that he didn't and allowed Mr. Kagan to withdraw. Under Wisconsin procedure, they also affirmed the judgment. Anders, I don't think, requires that, but that's Wisconsin procedure.
There was an ineffective assistance in his response. He still...
Not in the no merit response.
That's where you're
in the 974-06 motion, he claimed ineffective assistance of trial counsel,
which should have been raised in the other one.
Well, but
well,
he also
should have been raised in the 974-02, and you're just saying if he had raised it in his response to the Anders brief, they might have done, you know, if they were in a good mood that day, they might have sent it back. But maybe they wouldn't have. They didn't have to at the time.
Well, I think what they would have done is they would have examined to determine whether there was any arguable merit in the claim.
But they aren't the right tribunal to hear that claim, you're saying, if in fact it's supposed to be
Well, it depends on what
trial.
Claim it is.
Well, if it's ineffectiveness of trial counsel, you've just said
right.
The correct place for this to happen in Wisconsin.
That would be in the trial court.
The trial court immediately after the judgment.
Right. And may I finish?
If
in the instance they would have determined that there was that he had raised an issue of arguable merit, then depending on whether they believe the issue needed evidence or not. So in other words, if they could tell from the record there was no prejudice, they might have decided it on the merits right then. But if it needed evidence, then the question would have been whether to dismiss the appeal and allow the pro se to proceed, or whether to appoint or new counsel. Or I think what they would have had to do when Mr. Page's case came, because they didn't have the authority to just remand.
They being
the Court of Appeals. The problem with Mr. Page is he never said in his 974-06, the reason I didn't raise this is because Mr. Kagan didn't file a motion for, a motion to defer a Mockner hearing. So he never gave the Court of Appeals. His excuse was, I didn't have the transcript of the suppression hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Weinstein. Now you have a minute left, but we gave Mr. Weinstein an extra minute, so you've got two now.
Appreciate it. At the end of the day, the state of Wisconsin does not provide counsel in the collateral proceedings. That's where Mr. Page raised the claim of ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel. It was the only time, the only forum where that could be raised. On appeal, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals made a merits ruling. They reflected back on the original time that they had heard Mr. Page's appeal on direct appeal. They said, we made an independent review of the record then. We looked at all the issues. They didn't have merit. And in that context, they say it follows by necessity, therefore, that Page seeks reviews of errors which were addressed and dismissed, and there's no merit appeal. Having addressed these issues previously, this court will not address these issues again. I believe under Cowan v. Wilkinson, that's a merits ruling on his claim of ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel. And the question becomes, well, do we cut that claim in half and say the half where post-conviction counsel didn't challenge the effectiveness of trial counsel, that's waived, the other half is not? I don't believe there's grounds to do so. And it's a respectful request that we be allowed to go back to district court and litigate this thing on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Snow, you are here by appointment to the court. You have the deep thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client. Indeed, the court thanks both counsel for their help today, and we appreciate from both of you this short course in Wisconsin procedure.
Mr. Smelly, how is it you come all the way from Texas for this?
Well,
it's much cooler here than in Houston, I know.
Thank you.